I'm Nash Wedderburn. Welcome to UBS On Air. On the next installment of our investment strategy podcast series, we turn the discussion to the importance of preparing for your legacy. Joining us for today's conversation is Ainsley Carbone, Total Wealth Strategist, as well as Justin Waring, Investment Strategist, both from the Chief Investment Office. So Ainsley and Justin, welcome back. And Ainsley, I know you'll be leading today's conversation, so I'll go ahead and pass it over to you.
Thank you, Nash. So Justin, you recently published two blogs on the legacy strategy within our 3L framework. First one's titled, What Are You Planning to Give and to Whom? Second one is all about how to give a meaningful inheritance. So I think these are really important blogs because, at least in CIO, we haven't published much content around the softer side of legacy planning, meaning how to have those conversations with your family, making sure it's in line with what your wishes are. And I think that's especially important because a lot of what the 3L framework is making sure that your wealth is aligned with your objectives.
Right.
So can you just kind of start off, I guess, talking about the first piece, why it is that you started, that you wanted to start building out this content and how you think it can help our investors?
Yeah, I think knowing what the legacy is comprised of is a really important first step, because the things that we will pass on financially to our children and grandchildren might not be the same composition as what we're actually going to spend to sort of make it through retirement. So what is going to be left over when we're done spending for retirement, in other words, once we've spent down the longevity strategy, is going to be sort of a concentrated position in a single stock that you were waiting to defer capital gains until death, so you get the step up in cost basis. It will be your primary residence, vacation homes, things like that, lots of illiquid assets. And so it's useful to think proactively, your art collections, you know, things like that. It's useful to think proactively about what those things might look like given your current plan and whether you want to adjust those assets sort of in your will, or if you want to try to sell out of those things while you're alive to give a more liquid inheritance to your children. There's just, like you said, the softer side of what is the legacy strategy, what are those assets, and how can I use those resources to pass on the most after-tax wealth as possible to my children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you make a good point about how sometimes, or a lot of times, what is or what's passed on to the next generation is what's left over in the longevity strategy. And just for the listeners who aren't familiar with the liquidity longevity legacy framework, longevity is the strategy that's utilized to set aside those assets that we're going to earmark for our lifetime spending. And then legacy is essentially what assets we don't need for our lifetime we put in the legacy strategy for the benefit of others. So sometimes it can be seen as a surplus of our lifetime spending. And for families who don't have so much wealth that they don't even need it during their lifetime, sometimes families can think, oh, well, I don't have a significant amount of wealth that's going to be passed on, so I don't need to think about legacy planning. However, most of us don't spend every single dollar down till our last day on earth. So there is ultimately going to be something that's going to be passed on, and whether or not it's specifically invested with an objective in mind, such as passing it on to the next generation, I do think it's important to still have those conversations, because ultimately we need to make sure the next generation or whoever it is that's going to be receiving it is made aware of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think one of the benefits of the 3L framework is that it allows us to think intentionally about the dollars ahead of time. And it's true that the longevity strategy, if you're targeting an 80% probability of success, you're going to fund it with enough capital that your last check doesn't bounce, right? There will be some left over at the end. It's useful to know how much that might be. That's why you can use your financial plan and discuss with your financial advisor about how much that is likely to be. But there may be indeed a little bit more than you expected left over. And as your plan evolves, as you enter retirement and get closer to the end of your life expectancy, it will become clear that there will be legacy capital that you can set aside for distinct bequest and inheritance purposes. And I think, to your point, it's important to think about what are my objectives when it comes to inheritance? Warren Buffett said you should think about leaving enough money to your kids so that they can do anything, but not so much that they can do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us sort of delay the inheritance conversation because, first of all, it's linked with death, and our own mortality is not something we like to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And the other aspect is that we are probably, most of us, pretty worried about spoiling our kids and grandchildren by giving them sort of extra money that we don't know that if they'll just squander it in some way. And so what we found was that actually looking at the average inheritance, it goes to people who are aged 51, which is up over the last 30 years from the an average age of 41. And I was very surprised by that data, because it suggests that, for one thing, people are leaving most of their wealth to the next generation, to their kids. And they're giving it to them at a time when the kids are already on the path to retirement as it is. So one possible downside to waiting that long is that they don't get to have that money when their life is most difficult, which is when they're sort of entering their career and trying to find a job that they're passionate about and start a family. All of those interesting life events that can come with a lot of financial hardship.
Mm-hmm.
That's ideally when you would want to be giving money to your children to help them just sort of smooth out the rough patches. When they're 51, it's not that impactful. It might be able to give them a year or two head start on retirement, but it's not the most impactful that it could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of people, when they think about the legacy strategy, is that it's something that's designated for the needs that go beyond your own, but that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be given to people beyond your lifetime, because
mm-hmm.
you can, of course, gift those assets and make those donations to those charitable organizations during your lifetime. And that's ultimately your conclusion of the blog that you did about the legacy strategy, how to leave a meaningful inheritance. And I want to kind of pivot the conversation a little bit to go off of that blog. We found the statistic by Williams Group Wealth Consultancy that 70% of wealthy families lose their wealth by the second generation and 90% lose the wealth by the third generation. So I think it's important to talk about maybe why that happens. And can you touch on maybe the importance or the role that effective communication can play when it comes to legacy planning?
Well, first, I want to ask a question. Do you think that spending the fortune that the oldest generation created is necessarily losing it? Right?
It depends on what their objective was.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
And so that ties into the answer to your question, which is sort of, what are the values that you want to instill in your children and grandchildren?
Mm-hmm.
Is there merit in building lasting wealth just for the sake of it? And this is obviously tied into a lot of political debates these days about, you know, whether it's natural to have billionaires and things like that. The question is sort of the idea of the landed gentry, where you've got money that just lasts forever from generation to generation. Is that a good objective? I think for some people, that is going to be what they want, and it's important to have that conversation with your children and instill those values in your children if that's what you want your legacy to be. If you want your legacy to be sort of Warren Buffett's philosophy of giving enough to each generation so that they can have flexibility and choose passion over money, then maybe you do want that legacy to be temporary and maybe be intentionally spent. You're hoping that, you'll be giving enough of a head start and an opportunity to the next generation that can generate an inheritance of their own,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily that yours will make it multiple generations.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different philosophies around this, and I think it's important to remember for everyone that this idea that we see in movies about, like, the family huddling in a dark room with the lawyer and then in that moment finding out how much each of them is going to get from the will that's being read aloud. I mean, what a disastrous idea.
Mm.
No one would want that to happen to their family, I think. You know, what's the merit in having that be a surprise gift?
Especially, it goes along with, I know you and I have talked about this before, the whole idea of when someone wins the lottery,
yeah,
and it can ultimately, it might just kind of derail their life. Their spending is extreme. It's more than what they can actually afford. And I think it's because of the fact that it's something that they're not used to. And by having that surprise aspect of it, it just, they're not prepared for it. So I think depending on how much of a surprise you want it to be, regardless of that, I think it needs to be something that's discussed prior to the surprise actually being made aware to the family.
I think lots, I mean, so we, I just wrote another piece, called Is Hanukkah Better Than Christmas? And the, the basic idea is this, this idea of consumption smoothing that economists have, that like lots of little surprises, happy little gifts are better than one big gift.
Mm-hmm.
You just get more enjoyment out of it. Like the example I give is my niece, Caroline, starts out Christmas with like this gigantic pile of gifts because she's the oldest grandchild and she's the one that like is old enough to appreciate Christmas at this point. And by like 3 hours into opening presents, she's nonplussed. It's just, it's lost its special flavor, or she's latched onto one gift and now she's distracted. So like if we celebrated Hanukkah, then it would be spread over 8 days and she'd start every day with that same fresh excitement and it would be more happiness per dollar spent on the gifts. So from an economic perspective, little gifts throughout. And then the other aspect here, of course, is that you're alive to see the people receiving the gifts. And an end of life bequest that's a big dollar amount. I think the reason that is such a trope is because that's the default. If you don't do any planning, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be a big gift to the IRS because you didn't plan your estate, and it's going to be a big gift to individual people in your family because you didn't take the opportunity to distribute it, you know, across your family. And I do think that some people will choose that. I, you know, for one thing, it gives you more flexibility on your own spending and makes it less likely that you're going to run out of money because you gave away too much. I understand that. I think for a lot of families that might make sense. But if you have the opportunity and the flexibility to give, at some point during your life, why not doing it during your life as opposed to at the end?
Mm-hmm. And that way you can also make sure that they're using it in the way that you had intended.
Right. Well, and it's also that they're doing it in a way that is intentional to themselves. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the lottery example, there's a great Confucius quote I read earlier, which is, if you want to make someone happy for a year, give them a large inheritance. If you want, if you want to be happy for your whole life, give to others.
Mm-hmm.
Like we get enjoyment out of giving, and receiving is a sort of, there's all this guilt and sort of obligation and things like that. This is really why the inheritance conversation is so stymied in American families, especially. You know, we've got this puritanical thing about talking about money, and then you know, talking about finances with family. It's just a really tough barrier to breach, and so it's totally understandable that a lot of families delay that conversation or have trouble starting it. Our recommendation is that you find little ways of starting that conversation, especially with young children, so that you can creatively instill value in them. You know, not only the value of the importance of saving and investing, but also the merits of spending it based on your own values. So, you know, your charitable values and things like that you need to instill early on in order to have it sort of be ingrained in who they are when they get older.
Yeah, because it's certainly not a conversation that you're going to be having one time overnight. I think it's an ongoing conversation, especially if you're starting it with someone younger, because they're not going to have that full understanding of money and what wealth is and how to manage it and law and why it's important to be aware of your long-term goals. So I think especially for those who have young people in their families, I think now is a great time, especially around the holidays, to kind of throw in little pieces of the conversation that can help add to that whole, maybe not financial literacy, but just exposing them to the idea of talking about money, because it is so taboo and very many families like to talk about it. So I think holidays are certainly a good time to start thinking about it. it might not be the best thing.
Do you want to talk about a few ways that that conversation gets started?
Well, I know we talk about college costs a lot.
So one of the things that we talked about was because of the tax law, you need to bundle your gifts in order for it to make sense to claim an itemized deduction on your taxes. That means that gifting into a donor advised fund is sort of already something that lots of people do. That's good in a way because you can spread your charitable donations out over multiple years, but actually claim the deduction all in 1 year. One thing that they could do, for example, is to meet as a family to talk about which charities to donate to out of the donor advised fund.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also an opportunity because you can invest those funds before they're distributed. You can sort of update your children on how they're invested and why it grew 7% or 8% or whatever. You can sort of use that as a lever to explain how markets work.
Mm-hmm. And even if you're not working with something along the lines of investments, I do have a friend who I'm very fond of and I admire how diligent and savvy she is with her money. She's always been a saver. She's one of my first friends to buy a house. And she was telling me about when she was growing up, of course, her parents were helping her. They paid for the house. They paid for her food, shelter, everything like that. But when she'd go to the grocery store with her mom would say, okay, these are the things we need. This is the money I'm going to give you. I want you to go around and buy the things that we need and make sure that we can buy it all with this money. And it kind of just, it showed her the value of money, how you need to budget for certain things. If you don't have the money, you're not going to be able to go and just, you can't just swipe your credit card. Only swipe a credit card if you have the money to back up that bill. And I think there are ways to introduce that regardless of the age and regardless of how much exposure they already have to finances and personal finance.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anything you want to add before we wrap up?
Well, one other thing that we mentioned in these blogs, but we haven't talked about yet, is the idea of instead of giving just cash gifts or you know, just presents, but also gifting appreciated securities to your children.
Mm-hmm.
Another way of getting them hooked on investing early, and is also a way to offload your capital gains exposure onto them, which is fun.
Great idea. Back to you, Nash.
Well, Ainsley and Justin, thank you very much for joining us today. I will highlight for our listeners that both blogs, Legacy Strategy, How to Leave a Meaningful Inheritance, as well as What Are You Planning to Give and to Whom?, are both up now on UBS Online Services. From the UBS On Air studio in New York City, I'm Nash Wedderburn. Thank you for joining us.
Time frames may vary. Strategies are subject to individual client goals, objectives, and suitability. This approach is not a promise or guarantee that wealth or any financial results can or will be achieved.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit UBS.com/working with us. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.